Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Crystal Quest Show with John Dennis Govert and Happy Hara on HealthyLife.net, a positive talk radio where we explore crystal energy, astrology, earth mysteries, metaphysics, ancient cultures, and spirituality. I am your co-host, Happy Hara, and I'm here with our other co-host, John Dennis Govert. Speaking of ancient cultures, we are discussing a special topic today about one of the world's oldest living religions. Mount Kailash is a sacred mountain located in northwestern Tibet. Four religions share that mountain culturally, considering it the sacred center of the world. Those religions include Hindu, Buddhist, Jain, and Bun. Bun is considered one of the world's oldest living religions, yet it is relatively unknown. Bun shares some similarity in its teachings with Buddhism, and since Buddhism is more widely known, it's a little easier to make a connection trying to understand some of Bun's concepts. John Dennis, I know you're a Tibetan Lama who studied Buddhism throughout your life. What is your connection with Bun?
I've been studying in the ancient tradition, which is called the Nyingma, but it shares a teaching. That group shares a teaching with Bun called Dzogchen, or the Great Perfection. And so it's a really, I've had some wonderful teachings from, you know, Bon masters about Dzogchen, and so I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, I knew that you would be really excited about this book. I mean, since you know more about the topic than I do, and I know you finished the book. I haven't quite finished the book yet, but what an epic adventure story. So let's talk a little bit about this book. We have two guests with us today who have studied Bun. Harvey Wright and Jackie Cole have written a new book titled Flight of the Bun Monks. It is a real-life adventure story about a group of Bun monks fleeing persecution across perilous mountains in the Himalayas, some of the most dangerous terrain on the planet. Their epic escape helps preserve the teachings of this ancient religion. The book authors, Harvey Wright and Jackie Cole, are a husband and wife team committed to bringing this story to the world. Harvey Wright is a journalist with more than 40 years of experience working at both U.S. newspapers and international news agencies. Jackie Cole has studied Bun for more than two decades and has taken many retreats with the main characters of the book, who have given their blessings and permission to share their story. Harvey and Jackie, welcome to the Crystal Quest Show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, so it says in your bio that you live in Galveston, Texas. Is that where you are now?
Yes.
So have you been to the Himalayas?
Yes, we in order to research this book, we were able to travel to the two main areas of the diaspora in India and in Kathmandu, Nepal, as well as did a pilgrimage to Tibet to try to see the places where they lived and traveled in Tibet.
Wow, what an adventure. So how did you get involved with this interesting adventure story?
Well, I've been studying Bun, and I would hear stories every time you take a teaching, as John Dennis can tell you from the Nyingma teachers, I'm sure is the same way. They always introduce the Dzogchen teachings with the history of it, who their teachers were, the lineage, and so forth. And so along with this, we would get snippets of stories of how they escaped from Tibet. One of our teachers was shot on the way out trying to escape. And we were getting older, they were getting older, and I was worried that the story would be lost once they passed. And so came home and mentioned it to Harvey, who is a journalist and knows about writing this stuff. And so I said, let's do this as a book. And he said, yes. So off we were. Once we got permission, we were off. And it took us a good number of years to do the research. We were both still working, and then with everyone scattered all across the world, it took us a good number of years to do the research. And we finally got it published this year.
Wow.
Yeah, Jackie first asked me that, she said, how long do you think it'll take us to finish this book? And I said, well, at least 2 years. And she said, no way, it won't take that long. It ended up taking us 10 years. So.
Well, you know, John Dennis and I co-wrote a book, too. And you know, I thought it was going to take us a lot shorter of a time. But, when you start researching topics, especially things about ancient religions and... I mean, it's like you open up a Pandora's box. And, I mean, you certainly did with the bone religion. Well, give us a little synopsis of this story. Like, about what time did it start? What time period does your kind of adventure story start?
Well, we have three main characters. And we trace them from their boyhood out through the diaspora. And so it essentially, in describing their boyhoods, those were in the 20s and 30s and 40s. The Chinese invaded Tibet in 1950, and then they their escapes were in 59 and 60. They're meeting up with a British scholar and going to London was in the 60s, and then the return to India and the building of the community and the diaspora community in India and reestablishing the religion in exile, that occurred during the late 60s and 70s.
Oh, okay. Since you have also studied Bun, it's good to ask you this question because, like, why do you think this story is important?
Ooh.
Well, it's a hidden bit of history about one of the, it's really an important religion, and people just don't know about it. And that it came so close to extinction and then was rescued by these really heroic efforts of these monks and some... And David Snelgrove, the Englishman who they met, I think it's a remarkable story that shouldn't be lost. It would have been lost history had we not written this book, and we did not. And that was the whole purpose of this book. We never thought we were going to make any money off this book, and I doubt if we will. But we felt it was a part of history that people needed to know about, and that's.
And for me personally, it was important to write it because of the amazing determination, devotion, and courage that my teacher showed. And that's an inspiration for anyone that is trying to connect with their own spirituality.
You know, so tell us a little bit more about Bun. I know about Bun from my association with John Dennis, but if I'd ever met John Dennis, I don't know if I would have ever heard of it. So, tell us a little bit more about the Bun religion.
Okay, I'll take this one. I usually do the Bun questions, and Harvey usually does the history questions, but... And the Bun was the traditional religion in Tibet prior to Buddhism coming in the 7th century. And and then it was outlawed. And so the the Bunpo say that the religion that's practiced now, the Yongzheng Bun, it was the same prior to Buddhism coming in. The Buddhists feel like that when Yongzheng Bun began to be revitalized in the 11th century, that it just borrowed from Buddhism. So Tibetan Buddhism and Bun looks very similar. If you walked into their temples and weren't familiar with the iconography, you might not be able to tell the difference between them. But the Bun tradition has a number of, it's really a curriculum and ways to deal with practices and ways to train your mind so that you can advance towards what is considered enlightenment or Buddhahood. And that's a connection with your own true nature. They have practices that are tools to help heal, to quiet the mind, for protection. So all the things that you need to get through day-to-day life so that then you can move into a situation where you are comfortable enough with life to be able to train your mind to find its own true natural way. So so it looks very similar to the Tibetan Buddhism tradition, especially Nyingma. And but if you ask which one came first and who borrowed from whom, it depends on who you're talking to, whether you're talking to the Buddhist or the Bun, as to who borrowed from who. Bun is a bit more earth-based and dependent on the element, the essence of the elements is woven into all of its traditions. And so because it was the original tradition in Tibet, which is an incredibly harsh environment, the connection to the spirits and the deities and the mischievous ones of the elements is all woven into it as well.
Well, so anytime I have, not that I've studied Bun, but anytime I've looked into it at all, it seems very shamanic to me. I mean, maybe I'm, what do you say? Is it shamanic to you?
Happy, I know, I'm not sure I know what the word shamanic means in different situations. It's, different people have different definitions of the word shamanic, and it has been called a shamanic religion, but I'm not exactly sure what that's supposed to mean. So there are traditions, there are practices that do connect with the spirits of the earth and ways to connect with, for example, the Nagas, which are the spirits of the waters, and the Lu and the spirits dwell in the trees. And if you want to do a ceremony to appease something, then you have to go find water from this particular spring and the milk from this particular cow and that kind of stuff. So there are those types of rituals that are incorporated into it, which certainly I think some people might consider shamanic, but I think it all depends on the definition of shaman.
Yeah, and I think the way you just described it, that's how I would describe shamanism, is where you're working with, like the earth or nature spirits to some degree. You're connecting with them, the energies of them.
The first book that was printed in English in the West about Bun was written by one of our characters in David Snowgrove, and it's called The Nine Ways of Bun. And what it does is it describes the various practices and the levels of, and the amount of, not sure levels is a good way to put it, but levels of practices, rituals, and so forth that are incorporated into Bun, which actually make your life easier to live. And in the top one, of course, the ninth way is Dzogchen, the great perfection, which is very much the same as what is taught in Nyingma.
Yeah, and I'm pretty certain that Bun monks would reject the title of shaman and would not want to be called shamans.
All right. Well, no, that's
I agree. I think so too.
Well, you know, I'm the novice here on this. All right. So, but what I was going to mention, so this book that you just mentioned, Jackie, The Nine Ways of Bun, would this be a good introductory text to say if somebody wanted to study, like begin just a study of this? Would that be a good introduction text?
I was just thinking the best introductory text is our book.
Oh, all right. No, well, it probably is because, you know, it's probably, like, especially to a Western culture, you know.
To a Western culture. But truly, The Nine Ways of Bun is an okay book. It was written in the 60s, and it's a little bit arcane. There are teachers that are now been teaching in the West for a good number of years and have written books that cover the concept that in a more Western vocabulary. And so some of those might be easier for people to start with. And you can Google Bun, and there'll be a long list of teachers and long list of things, and then you can look through their books and figure out which one you might want to look at to start with. There's the Sangha that I practice with is called Ligmincha, in Ligmincha, Texas, and Ligmincha International has a website that includes a number of introductory teachings on it by Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche.
Oh, okay. No, I appreciate you sharing those resources. You know, I wanted to also kind of discuss a little bit about the age of Bun, like how old and ancient it really is. And I think you already mentioned this. There's something called, my pronunciation might be really off here, but the Zhangjun culture, which I think predates Bun. Is that correct?
Well, Zhangjun was a country or a civilization, a kingdom that was active Tibet was an old country. Zhangjun had bordered it, and eventually Tibet grew up enough that it took over Zhangjun. But Zhangjun was to the west of Tibet, and Bun was actually very active in the Zhangjun area and was introduced into Tibet. But the Tibetans will tell you that, I mean, the Bunpos will tell you that Bun is 18,000 years old. The people that study it say the people that study archaeology and so forth say that doesn't really make any sense. But on the other hand, there was no written language back then, so there's no way to find any records back that far, so there's not a way to prove it one way or another. We do know that it was there in the 7th century and active when it was banned. And then more of it is more actual texts and so forth are found from the 11th century. There are Bun texts. I believe there's Bun texts that have been found in the Zhangjun language as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you know, and that's part of what is really interesting about, say a study of Bun, even if one did not study it like religiously or spiritually, but just understood how ancient this religion is, because it's like looking back in time to really earlier history of mankind, because this is like preserving. I think this is one of the most exciting things about your book is like you're putting some light on something that's really ancient and old from our past that predates written records.
According to the Bunpos.
Yes, you know. And so it's like, I know Hinduism does this to some degree too, because it's a very old religion as well. But some of these ancient religions, they are telling us something from our ancient past that might not be completely written down. And some of these practices probably are surviving through oral tradition. In fact, what do you know about their oral traditions?
Well, there are a good number of oral traditions in the Bun tradition, and when you get a teaching, they will tell you whether this teaching came from a continuous lineage or if it was oral up until such and such a date when someone was authorized to write it down, those kinds of histories. It's one of the interesting things about this is that all of that is taught in each teaching, where it came from. There, the teachings on Dzogchen, the Sanje Ninju teachings in Dzogchen, is an oral tradition that has been continuous and has never been broken from teacher to student to that student becoming a teacher and teaching it to the next student and so forth for thousands of years according to history.
Wow, that is amazing. So we need to take a break right now. We will be right back with our guests, Harvey Rice and Jackie Paul, authors of Flight of the Boon Monks. You are listening to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio. We will be right back.
You've never read a crystal book like this one. Chintamani Crystal Matrix is Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert's new book, and it is filled with so much information that'll rock your crystal world. Discover how to intentionally use gemstones. Find out all about your own wish-fulfilling gem that can bring you your deepest desire directly into this world. But that's just the start. Get your copy of Chintamani Crystal Matrix at innertraditions.com or at amazon.com, or order it from fine bookstores everywhere. ChintamaniCrystalMatrix.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Okay, I know that you have heard about astrology, but what about using crystals and astrology together? Well, that exists. It's astrogemology, and you're in luck because Happy Hara does just that. Happy presents you with crystals, stones, and gems that align with your unique zones and planets in your natal astrology chart. But it's even better than that. She teaches you how to use them to empower your life. Set up your appointment today. Visit ChintamaniMatrix.com, go to the services page, and just email happy. That's at ChintamaniMatrix.com.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
John Dennis Govert, yogi, guru, and ordained Tibetan Lama, has been doing traditional astrology readings for over 40 years. He can help you manifest your own happiness and navigate the timing of the best periods for pursuing the opportunities available to you throughout the year. You can make informed choices. Get the support you need with your own astrology reading from John Dennis. Visit ChintamaniMatrix.com. Go to the services page. Email John Dennis directly to schedule your appointment. That's at ChintamaniMatrix.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
ChintamaniMatrix.com is your source for all the up-to-date things happening with crystals, crystal intention coaching, free guided videos on meditation programming and clearing crystals, and even a monthly New Moon Crystal blog to help you clarify and manifest intentions in the right way and at the right time. So visit ChintamaniMatrix.com, and while you're there, sign up for the mailing list so you can receive monthly crystal intention updates. That's ChintamaniMatrix.com.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Crystal Quest Show with Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert. And today we are talking to authors Harvey Rice and Jackie Cole about their book, Flight of the Boon Monks. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the characters in the book who were also your teachers. But I wanted you to just start with, you know, life is very funny, and somehow in the late 80s, I was in Los Angeles, and I went to what I thought, you know, was a lecture by, it just said a Boon Lama. It turned out to be the eminent Tenzin Namdok, who's one of your characters, And of course it wasn't, you know, it was a preliminary. It was like talking about like one of the three essential, mantras of Bun. But, you know, I was surprised that part of my experience has intersected with what you're writing about. So could let's just start with that teacher.
I just got goosebumps. You're so fortunate to have met him. Do you want to talk a little bit about Youngson? I'll let Harvey talk a little bit about Youngson. He knows him as well.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, so we, in the book, we refer to him as Tenzin, and we had to, because their names change during their life, and they get titles attached to them, we had to decide on which name we're going to use. And I think some Bunpos may be upset that we didn't use his titles every time we refer to him, but we just didn't think that was manageable. But in any case, so he was born in 1925, and his father died when he was very young, and according to Tibetan tradition, once something like that happens, then the child has to go with the family of the father, if it's a male child, and if it's a female child, it goes to the family of the mother. And so the mother went back to live with her family, and he ended up living separated from his mother with an uncle. And they were nomadic farmers, and that uncle died, and then he went to live with another uncle who was a monk. And so that was his first introduction to the spiritual side of Bun. And then he went on to be a painter, learned to be a painter because from his mother's side of the family. And he went to paint a Yung Drung Ling monastery, and when the painting was finished, and he told them that he was going to stay there and become a monk. And that was against the wishes of his family. They tried to get him to not do that, but he was insistent, and he stayed there, and that sort of launched his career
as a monk. So, and then he just had these great adventures learning to be a monk. He was so dedicated to it until it was untenable to stay in Tibet anymore after the Chinese invasion, and then he went to escape.
Right, which is, I mean, the story that you've written is, it's incredibly complicated. There's a bunch of stories about monks, including the Dalai Lama, escaping. But each one is really different. But this one is different in the sense that we're following, like, all these different characters at the same time. So it's more like a novel, really. In the sense that we follow them and then we leave them for a while and we go into somebody else's life and then they hook up later on. So, I mean, I want to recommend it for everybody just, you know, on the level of an adventure story, because it's amazing kind of in that way. And then he's at a monastery in the end, sort of like in the part of Tibet that's very flat and high. And, I mean, his escape is amazing by itself. Do you want to describe that?
Oh, it's a miracle every time we were doing these interviews, we would come to a part where something was like a little miracle, or how in the world did that happen, or what, you know, and it was just, we kept having these over and over and over again with his escape story. So it was, when he finally decided that he needed to leave, the monks from Minri had gone up to Sezik where he was, and they were all getting ready to leave. About 3 days out from there, they were ambushed by a horde of Chinese troops, and he was shot and left for dead. and then through a number of different moves and things that happened here and there and so forth, he was able to survive and was placed in a, I'm not sure a concentration camp is quite the right, but an encampment that was a prison for captured people, Tibetans. And he stayed there for 10 months before he attempted to leave again. And in that one, he was successful by virtue of a number of other miracles, like a river being frozen that usually isn't. So then when we originally started this book, I thought it would end at the border when he got out, but there were so many more interesting things to the story once he did escape, and diaspora, the trip to London, and then the establishment of the settlement in India.
Right, which is it's like the sweep of history and just how complicated. I mean, it's like a Tolstoy novel.
Yeah.
It's got that many levels to it. So,
How kind. We did want it to read like a novel because we wanted people to be engaged and to have fun reading the book, to have it be a good, interesting adventure story. So we appreciate you saying that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like a lot of these stories, if you've read them, or even if you've seen the movie Kundun or something, there's a lot of pain, and you're writing about it like, you know, Yongzhen Tenzin was definitely... He was seriously injured. I mean, so he was recouping while on the road, and, you know, so... and actually, the weird thing about it is I met him because he had come to Los Angeles to get some medical treatment. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been there.
Yes. 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 He's so interesting in that when you're in his presence, you just feel good. You feel at peace in his presence. Did you find
well,
that?
Absolutely. I mean, what I felt badly about was that we had an audience there that was people who were pretty ignorant of, well, Bon, Buddhism, Hinduism, spiritual practices, and they asked him such dumb questions. You know, so I thought, but even through it all, he did radiate a lot, and I thought, you guys are getting the teaching if you just shut up.
Well, he's very patient as well.
Yeah, he really was. So I am going to break for a moment because we need to take a break and remind our listeners that you're listening to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio.
Okay, I know that you have heard about astrology, but what about using crystals and astrology together? Well, that exists. It's astrogemology, and you're in luck because Happy Hara does just that. Happy presents you with crystals, stones, and gems that align with your unique zones and planets in your natal astrology chart. But it's even better than that. She teaches you how to use them to empower your life. Set up your appointment today. Visit chintamanimatrix.com, go to the services page, and just email happy. That's at chintamanimatrix.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
John Dennis Govert, yogi, guru, and ordained Tibetan Lama, has been doing traditional astrology readings for over 40 years. He can help you manifest your own happiness and navigate the timing of the best periods for pursuing the opportunities available to you throughout the year. You can make informed choices. Get the support you need with your own astrology reading from John Dennis. Visit chintamanimatrix.com. Go to the services page. Email John Dennis directly to schedule your appointment. That's at chintamanimatrix.com.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
ChintamaniMatrix.com is your source for all the up-to-date things happening with crystals, crystal intention coaching, free guided videos on meditation programming and clearing crystals, and even a monthly New Moon Crystal blog to help you clarify and manifest intentions in the right way and at the right time. So visit chintamanimatrix.com, and while you're there, sign up for the mailing list so you can receive monthly crystal intention updates. That's chintamanimatrix.com.
Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com.
You've never read a crystal book like this one. Chintamani Crystal Matrix is Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert's new book, and it is filled with so much information that'll rock your crystal world. Discover how to intentionally use gemstones. Find out all about your own wish-fulfilling gem that can bring you your deepest desire directly into this world. But that's just the start. Get your copy of Chintamani Crystal Matrix at innertraditions.com or at amazon.com, or order it from fine bookstores everywhere. ChintamaniCrystalMatrix.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Crystal Quest Show with John Dennis Govert and Happy Hara. And you're listening to HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio, and we're discussing The Flight of the Bun Monks with its authors, Harvey Rice and Jackie Cole. So before we go any further, could you please describe where people can get a hold of you and where they can, obtain your book?
The website is flightofthebunmonks.com, all one word, flightofthebunmonks.com. And we have, that's our website. You can go there, and there's an email address on there and links to purchase the book. You can buy the book wherever you buy books, and it's available as a paperback, as an e-book, and also as a very nicely done audio book if you like to listen to your books.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yeah, it's perfect. It's a perfect adventure for people who are driving a long distance. Yeah,
yes.
That would be great. Well, I want to talk about the fact, you know, that in the foreword, the Dalai Lama has written a foreword to you. So could you describe how you ended up arranging that to happen?
Oh, that was very fortunate, and we feel very humbled and honored for the Dalai Lama to write a foreword for our book. Our resident Lama in Bun Lama in Houston is friends with the Bumpo representative to the Tibetan government in exile on their cabinet. And so they have a connection to the Dalai Lama's office and the secretary. Although the Dalai Lama is not involved in the politics of the Tibetan government in exile anymore, he gave that up a number of years ago. The people who work in the Tibetan government in exile have connections with his office, of course. And so he was able to present the book to the office of the Dalai Lama, and they read through it and liked it, and he was able to, he was very kind to write a foreword for the book and to promote the book, and we're very pleased and honored for that.
Well, and I think the Dalai Lama's mission has been to try and recognize all the parts of Tibetan culture and really recognize Bun back as, like, you know, a very close cousin to, you know, the Buddhist teachings as well. However, whoever's first or whatever, but when you read the teachings, they're very similar.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so that's a big thing. And then, one of the teachers of your characters is Sanjay Tenzin, who goes on to become the head of the main Bun monastery in exile. But in his, he went to with his friend to Drepung Monastery, which for everybody listening is like a Gelugpa Tibetan Buddhist monastery. So it was a very unusual move for him to go, or for the both of them to go and study there. Do you want to describe that, please?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so it was sort of like, that was Drepung is the largest, at the time, was the largest monastery in Tibet and the most prestigious. It had both political as well as spiritual dominance.
If I may have as a side, most of the monasteries, unlike the Christian monasteries where you go and live there, most monasteries in Tibet are considered schools. They're more like universities. So you go to school there, and then when you get done, you go out back to the world to work.
Yes. Yeah, so,
right.
And so for them to go there, they it was like going, working on a PhD, sort of, like, it was like advanced study to go there. And so they had already had Geshe degrees, which in itself is almost like a doctorate. Because, and, but then they went there, and that just to get even more knowledge. It's a very prestigious school. And when they went there, they were interviewed by this Mongolian monk. And he still had, being Bunpos and a minority religion, they were still a little bit leery of them because they were not Buddhists. And there was a lot of prejudice, even at that time, there was a lot of prejudice toward Bun on the part of Buddhists. Not all Buddhists, but on some. And so
right.
The Mongolian had to ask, he asked them, well, do you believe in the founder of the Gelugpa sect? Do you believe in him? And they said, oh, of course we do, because as Bonpos, they accepted all the religious figures in Buddhism. Although they didn't quite think of them in maybe sometimes exactly the same way as Buddhists do. But they accepted them as credible religious figures with teachings that they could learn. And so
yeah.
With that, they were accepted into the...
To the school there.
To the school there. And...
That's an amazing story in itself, but... Before we go, I just wanted to mention that and give you time to make a quick comment on it, but you have a whole chapter devoted to the CIA, and I'm bringing this up because it's part of the adventure story, but it's part of the fact that, you know, Western powers and the United States government have gotten involved in Tibetan politics. So could you describe a little bit about that, Harvey?
Yes, the CIA got involved in not... To help the United States in the Cold War, and that's their interest was to destabilize China, but they led the Tibetans to believe that they were going to help them in maybe liberate the Tibetans, and maybe would offer them guns and maybe side with them, and their help was minimal. And the CIA, in the end, never really understood the Tibetans and their culturally, which really means that they trained them, that they got Tibetans and trained them, and then would drop them back into Tibet. And but they didn't understand that Tibetans, they trained them in small unit tactics, which is good for guerrilla warfare. But
right.
Tibetan culturally, when they would fight, they would bring all their families and all their cattle and stuff would be kept nearby because they were most of them were nomadic. And make these mass cavalry charges, which were not suitable to small unit tactics. And the CIA never understood that.
Right, they didn't do their homework.
Yeah,
it actually, I really think that people should read this for, you know, just to get a whole other side of the history and what was going on. And I mean, there's just a whole level of political intrigue that's, you know, a theme that goes through the book that is very complicated. And I think you both do a very good job of, like, exposing that and the religious teachings and the drama and, you know, the riots that were going on in Lhasa and all over and just how everything was shared. So I want to thank you both for sharing your story with us and your book, and I encourage all our readers to get a hold of this book in whatever form you can and just immerse yourself in it. So thank you, and I want to remind our listeners that they're listening to the Crystal Quest Show at HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio.
John Dennis Govert, yogi, guru, and ordained Tibetan Lama, has been doing traditional astrology readings for over 40 years. He can help you manifest your own happiness and navigate the timing of the best periods for pursuing the opportunities available to you throughout the year. You can make informed choices. Get the support you need with your own astrology reading from John Dennis. Visit chintamanimatrix.com. Go to the services page. Email John Dennis directly to schedule your appointment. That's at chintamanimatrix.com.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
ChintamaniMatrix.com is your source for all the up-to-date things happening with crystals, crystal intention coaching, free guided videos on meditation programming and clearing crystals, and even a monthly new moon crystal blog to help you clarify and manifest intentions in the right way and at the right time. So visit ChintamaniMatrix.com, and while you're there, sign up for the mailing list so you can receive monthly crystal intention updates. That's ChintamaniMatrix.com.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
You've never read a crystal book like this one. Chintamani Crystal Matrix is Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert's new book, and it is filled with so much information that'll rock your crystal world. Discover how to intentionally use gemstones. Find out all about your own wish-fulfilling gem that can bring you your deepest desire directly into this world. But that's just the start. Get your copy of Chintamani Crystal Matrix at innertraditions.com or at amazon.com, or order it from fine bookstores everywhere. ChintamaniCrystalMatrix.com.
Uplifting talk. HealthyLife.net.
Okay, I know that you have heard about astrology, but what about using crystals and astrology together? Well, that exists. It's astrogemology, and you're in luck because Happy Hara does just that. Happy presents you with crystals, stones, and gems that align with your unique zones and planets in your natal astrology chart. But it's even better than that. She teaches you how to use them to empower your life. Set up your appointment today. Visit ChintamaniMatrix.com. Go to the services page and just email Happy. That's at ChintamaniMatrix.com.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio. And we're going to do the segment today of sort of the crystal, talk about the crystal of the month. And this crystal is connected to Gemini. It's actually connected to the 16th degree of Gemini. And it is it's in the middle of Gemini, and Gemini changes things up. It's a very light and quick and witty and communicative sign. There's curiosity with it. It has a lot to do with busyness and people errands and local travel and commuting and every kind of communication you can think of, you know, whether it's seminars, lectures, books, teaching, it's also learning. And it also connects to your sort of like family that goes laterally, like cousins and aunts and uncles and siblings and things like that. So the crystal that is connected with it today is called green calcite, which is actually a fairly common crystal. So, Happy, do you want to describe a little bit about green calcite?
Yes, I do. In fact, I'm holding one right now, so I'll go ahead and channel it a little bit too. But I'll actually start off by getting into some of the geek data first. You know, like some of its like scientific properties. Calcite, of course, is a calcium carbonate, and it is calcium is the most abundant metal on Earth, and it's the fifth most abundant element in the human body. Okay, and then it's the second part of calcite is the carbonate. So carbon is the 15th most abundant element in the Earth's crust, and the fourth most abundant element in the universe. But carbon is also the second most abundant element in the human body. So, you know, combining those two, calcium carbonate, we're dealing with these two elements are very, very abundant in the human body. You know, in my personal work with people, in my one-on-one sessions, over the years, I sometimes have this practice of having people, you know, I'll put a whole bunch of crystals, say 70 or 80 crystals in front of them, and then have them close their eyes, and then just feel the crystals with their hands, like just hovering over the crystals with their hands, and seeing, like, you know, if they get any response energetically. And I'm mentioning this because I started noticing certain crystals showing up for people energetically. Like, there was a pattern. I even call these the four movers and shakers of crystal energy. And calcite is one of them. You know, quartz is one of them. Selenite is another one. And fluorite. And fluorite, of course, has a lot of calcium in it anyway. And it caused me to start looking into calcite a lot more. And I also realized, you know, this is like one of those crystals that people need for nurturing. They need it for energy healing. They need it for strengthening, for relaxing. Like, it seemed like to be really, really important in an energetic standpoint. And so I've started working with it a lot more. When people start saying, you know, they need to deal with, say, energy blockages, they need more support, or they need more nurturing, I mean, I go to calcite-rich crystals quite a bit. So I do think this is like one of the major, like say if one was going to start a crystal collection, calcite should be like one of the top 10 most important crystals one should have in their collection. And what's nice is that calcite comes in so many colors. It's a little bit like fluorite. It comes in yellow, green, white, pink, blue, so whichever color you're most attracted to. Now, of course, today we're dealing with green calcite. So now what's causing the green in this particular type of calcite is chlorite. Some trace amounts of chlorite get trapped during the crystallization process. And chlorite I have found to be really good for really deep heart healing. So I do think of... I also, of course, chlorite is even found in, it makes the color green in trees and plants and stuff in the leaves. So I do think of like, say, green calcite being really, really good for even making a connection with the plant kingdom, but also for really deep heart healing. Now, its connection with Gemini, as soon as I saw that green calcite had this connection with Gemini, I totally agree with this, because I feel like green calcite helps to, you know, lighten the heart in some way. Like, it helps with heart healing, helps us to remember maybe to not take life so seriously, lighten the load in our heart, like helping to relieve maybe resentment, heartbreak, heart loss, all those things that kind of damage our heart energetically and keep us heavy and weighted. Calcite can help alleviate some of this. So I also think of it as helping to relieve stress, help us to be more spontaneous, maybe to return to what our heart is really here to do, you know, pump the blood in our body, keep the flow going, but also to manifest a sense of lightheartedness, to have love and joy in our lives. This is what we're really here to do. So I do think of it as helping to lighten the load. And I think I'm also talking about lightening the load because calcite is such a kind of a lightweight, soft crystal. You can scratch it with your fingernails, so it's not really hard and dense. And it has a soapy feel, so while you're holding it, it feels comforting and nurturing. Some people select crystals because they're pretty, but this calcite is one of those crystals that it feels more like a comfort stone. Because, of course, the calcium, this is what's in mother's milk. And, of course, we need calcium to relax, helps to build healthy bones. A lot of people who have a lot of stress in their lives, the stress actually eats up the calcium in our body. So holding calcium, I think, even might help us to absorb calcium better. You know, putting it up against the skin, the nerve endings can actually interact with calcium. I guess I think this is one of those crystals where you really can't go wrong with it. And now getting more into the green color, what I would do, especially with green calcite, say if you got a piece and you started working with it, start with your heart chakra, because green is sort of a heart chakra color. So put it up against the heart center, the center of the chest. You could even do the higher heart chakra, which is right above the chest, maybe between the throat and the heart center. Put it up against there and just kind of feel the crystal nurturing you, and then send this light green energy into the heart center and the lungs, and just allow it to relax you, then allow the energy just to kind of go throughout your whole body and just relax into that. And of course, holding the crystal while you're doing this, you're bringing in fresh new energy into the closed loop system of your body. This is why you want to work with a crystal right up against your skin. I just want to remind everyone that, we do we talk about these crystals on our radio show, but we also have a monthly blog on our website, the Chintamani Crystal Matrix, .com, and we talk about these crystals in a lot more depth in our monthly blogs.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good place to go to talk about that and learn about the astrology connected with it. And I want to thank everyone for listening in today and remind you that you've been listening to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio.